Afternoon. We'd like to welcome you to the September 9th, 2020 meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by city council and is not affiliated with any for-profit and nonprofit organizations. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the city of Savannah's zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes and new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and the impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for a decision. At this time, we ask that everybody mute your phones or mute your microphones until you are called on to speak, just to, so we can keep everything clear and everything can be recorded and captured for the record. Okay, we'll move on to the signpostings. Members of the board received packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Okay, seeing that there are none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or any board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Okay, if there are none, we will entertain the motion to approve the consent agenda.
This is Ellie, so moved.
All right, thank you. Do we have a second?
This is Becky Lynch, I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Lynch and Ms. Isaacs. So there's a motion on the floor to approve the consent agenda. If there's no discussion, we'll entertain a vote. Ms. Lynch, how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay, Mr. Bodick?
Aye.
Mr. Altshuler? Mr. Altshuler, make sure you're not muted.
Aye.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Isaacs.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Dodge.
Aye.
Ms. Memory.
Aye.
Okay. Ms. Taylor?
Aye. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay.
And Mr. Hull?
Aye.
All right. The motion carries and the consent agenda is approved. Okay. Now we'll move on to the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
That was?
Nan Taylor.
So just making sure.
Ellie, I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. All right, if there is no discussion on that motion, we will go ahead and entertain a vote. Ms. Lynch, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Bodick?
Aye.
Thanks. Mr. Altshuler?
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Isaacs?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Dodge.
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Memory.
Aye.
Okay. Ms. Taylor.
Aye.
Thank you. And Mr. Hull.
Aye.
Good deal. That motion carries and the adoption of the agenda is approved. Okay. We'll move on to the approval of the minutes. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the August meeting minutes?
So moved, David Altshuler.
Thank you, Mr. Altshuler.
Second, Stan Hool.
Thank you, Mr. Hool. All right, so there's a motion on the floor to approve the minutes from the August meeting. If there's no discussion on that motion, we will entertain a vote. We'll start with you, Ms. Lynch.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Bodick.
Aye.
Mr. Altshuler.
Aye.
Ms. Isaacs.
Aye.
Okay, Mr. Dodge.
Aye.
Ms. Memory.
Aye.
Okay, Ms. Taylor.
Aye.
All right, and Mr. Hool.
Aye.
Thank you. So the motion carries and the meeting minutes from the August meeting have been approved. Okay, get my paperwork straight. We move on to the items requested to be removed from the final agenda. There are none listed, so then we move on to the continued agenda. These applications have been requested to be continued to the following meeting. Is there a motion to approve the continued agenda?
This is Stephen. I move to continue the agenda.
Thank you, sir.
This is Ellie. I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs and Mr. Bowden. There's a motion on the floor to approve the continued agenda. If there's no discussion, and that motion was made by Mr. Bodick and seconded by Ms. Isaacs. If there is no discussion on that motion, we will go ahead and entertain a vote. Ms. Lynch?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Bodick?
Aye.
Hey, Mr. Altshuler?
Aye.
Ms. Isaacs?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Dodge?
Aye.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Memory?
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor?
Aye.
All right. And Mr. Hool?
Aye.
Thank you very much. The ayes have it, and the motion to approve the continued agenda has passed. Move on to requests for extensions. There are none listed, so we will now move into the regular agenda. All right. Staff will present the application with the recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by the board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment or comments. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chair. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comments if you do not have any. Just for general housekeeping, when we open up the floor for public comment, we ask that you use the raise your hand feature. You will then be called upon by the chairman, and at that time, we ask that you ensure that your phone or microphone is unmuted, and then you proceed. We're going to limit that comment to 3 minutes. So if you would please be concise with your concerns and or comments, that would be greatly appreciated for the efficiency of the meeting. All right. We'll move on and we'll call the first item on the regular agenda. And that will be the petition of Doug Bean Signs, 20-003365-COA at 10 East Oglethorpe Avenue, sign package.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure very quickly that everyone can hear me.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Thank you. So the applicant is requesting approval for a sign package for the Juliet Gordon Lowe Birthplace, which is located at 10 East Oglethorpe Avenue, The sign package is proposed to include one projecting sign, one flat-mounted wall directional sign, one flat-mounted wall sign, one ground sign, which is designed as a decorative pole sign, and four window vinyl signs. So as you may recall, last month on August 12th, you all made the decision to continue the petition for the sign package to this meeting to allow for the petitioner to revise the tree lawn sign to be a decorative pole sign. Since then, staff has received updated drawings with the sign with the tree lawn shown as a decorative pole sign. So I'm just going to go over a quick refresher of the history of this property for you. The main house and the west outbuilding, so the main house and the western outbuilding, were constructed around 1820 and are attributed to architect William Jay, and they are contributing structures within the Savannah National Historic Landmark District and the Savannah Local Historic District. The property underwent major renovations and additions in 1886 by a New York architect, which included the addition of a side porch and a third floor. And per staff's research, the stable building has been extensively remodeled for use as gift shops and offices. That was within the National Register nomination from 1987. A one-story addition was constructed the full width of the east facade between 1954 and 1973. And then the east outbuilding, which is this one over here, was believed to have been built in the early 1900s, possibly around 1903 as the construction year. However, it is listed as non-contributing on the contributing resources map. When you all continued this project, it was stated that it was for the reasoning of redesigning of the ground sign located within the tree lawn and not the other signage within the package. So even though the design of the other proposed signs were not altered between then and now, since you continued the entire sign package to this meeting, I will be going over all of that signage again very quickly throughout this presentation, as well as the new update to the tree lawn sign. So a 1.8 square foot directional sign is proposed to be located on the south facing facade. This sign is proposed to direct the public to various secondary uses of the property. Staff found this met the criteria. And they're also proposing three window signs, which are just vinyl cut letters, and they do not exceed 10% of the window area as allowed. The projecting sign is proposed to be bracket mounted to the west facing facade of the west outbuilding, which was again the original stapling carriage house, and is to be the principal use sign for the Juliet Gordon Lowe Birthplace store, as you see on the sign. The linear footage of this frontage maintained by that store is approximately 20 feet 5 inches, which allows for a maximum of a 12 square foot sign. And this projecting sign is proposed to be 9.8 square feet. The projecting sign is supposed to be constructed of sandblasted HDU and is to be painted green and white. Staff found no issues with that sign. The flat-mounted wall sign is proposed to be used as the principal use sign for the Juliet Gordon Lowe Birthplace Ticket Building. This sign will be minimally visible from the public right-of-way as it is set very far back within that garden. The linear footage of that business frontage maintained by the ticket building is approximately 82 feet and 6 inches, which allows for a maximum of 20 square feet. The wall-mounted sign here is proposed to be 7.3 square feet. And it again is proposed to be constructed of a bent and painted aluminum. I'm gonna show you quickly the original drawings for the ground sign that was brought to you at the last meeting, just so you can see what it looks like then. And then I'm gonna show you the updated drawings for that ground sign as well. So I'm just going to zoom in quickly over here so you can see it. So the ground sign is proposed as the principal use sign for the Juliet Gordon Low Birthplace Museum and Garden. The linear footage of business frontage maintained by the museum and garden is approximately 121 feet and 2 inches, which allows for a maximum of 12 square feet for a ground sign. The ground sign is proposed to be approximately 6.8 square feet. Furthermore, ground signs, specifically referring to a decorative pole sign, are allowed a maximum height of 10 feet. The ground sign, which is designed as a decorative pole sign, is proposed to be a height of 9 feet. And the ground sign is proposed to be constructed of painted bent aluminum, and that material is compatible. I do wanna go further, a little bit further into the requirements for ground signs specifically located in the tree lawn. It states that in lieu of a ground projecting or wall sign permitted, a non-illuminated decorative pole sign not exceeding 10 square feet in size may be installed in the grass plat between the curb line and sidewalk area if such site and sign design are jointly approved by the city manager or his or her designee in accordance with traffic engineering department procedure. Installation of private signs on public right-of-way, park and tree director in accordance with the American National Standards Institute and the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review in accordance with this ordinance. So if there is approval from all of those entities, which you are included as one of those entities, then a 10 square foot in size decorative pole sign is allowed within the tree lawn. So the ground sign is proposed as a non-illuminated decorative pole sign within the grass plat between the curb line and the sidewalk, and the sign is 6.8 square feet in size. There are two neighboring properties which include decorative pole signs within the tree lawn, and this tree lawn sign is proposed as being subordinate in size to those neighboring tree lawn signs, and staff found to be visually compatible. Included, and I'll show you, are photographs of those neighboring tree lawn signs, as well as various other tree lawn signs located throughout the downtown historic district. So I'm just gonna quickly go through that in just a moment. So staff is asking, if this is approved, that the petitioner ensure that all appropriate approvals beyond us are received prior to submitting drawings to staff to be stamped for permitting. As well as one more item, the attachment method for the mounting of the signs to historic stucco and brick facades was not specified within the submittal. So you'll see within our recommendation, we're asking that they ensure that all mounting is undertaken within mortar joints between the brick in order to retain and preserve the historic character and distinctive features of the building, as well as making the work reversible. So I'm just gonna quickly run through these. These ground signs within the tree lawn are specifically just within three streets, that being Oglethorpe Avenue, Liberty Street, and Gaston Street. And I've included 12 photos from there. But I do wanna show this letter quickly, which we did receive from the Downtown Neighborhood Association. So before I get to the staff recommendation, I'm going to go over a couple of the letters that we received. Within comment received by the Downtown Neighborhood Association in this letter, they mentioned that the seemingly sometimes conflicting guidance in NUZO, and for the references, that Article 9.9.7 states no sign shall be erected or located on any street or right of way, hydrant, lamppost, et cetera, with emphasis that the tree lawn is included within this right-of-way. So staff requested at that point, when we read this, a determination from the City of Savannah Zoning Administrator. And we did receive a letter back from the Zoning Administrator stating that Section 9.9.17 states that the purpose of the special sign districts is to provide supplemental sign standards for areas identified as special sign districts due to historic and other unique characteristics. Section 9.9.17 also states that in addition to the requirements of Section 9.9.1 through 9.9.13, signs in special sign districts shall comply with the provisions of this section, referring to 9.9.17, provided that where such provisions are in conflict with any requirements of section 9.9.1 through 9.9.13, the requirements of this section shall prevail. And that again is referring to 9.9.17. So regarding further comments that were received within the letter from the Downtown Neighbor Association at the last meeting, as well as within the attached letter, staff would like to just make a few clarifications on why we made the recommendation that we did. So referencing the statement that tree lawn signs are not a common feature along Oglethorpe Avenue, and that there are in fact only two such signs on Oglethorpe Avenue. This is true. However, Downtown Historic District and the Landmark District encompasses a large area. And while staff was doing preliminary research into signage within the tree lawn, staff was able to locate, and this is just again on three streets that I looked at, we were able to locate 12 such signs. Again, those were the signs that are here on this document. They further indicate that the signage is not needed due to the historic markers located within the tree lawn at this property. These items within our ordinance are not legally seen as signage. They are purely historical markers. Therefore, they are not pertinent to the sign ordinance. And the petitioner, in addition to the historic markers, the petitioner is allowed the signage permitted within the ordinance. And so these are the markers that are in reference here. If it'll look at them, there we go. We also received a letter from Artis Wood. She's in attendance with the meeting but is unable to speak, so she asked that I read her letter for her, just so it's on the record. So Artis states, 3 years ago, City Council passed the tree lawn ordinance after a year of detailed work performed by a committee made up of Tom Thompson, former MPC director, Ellen Harris, who is a former MPC staff member and preservation officer, Gordon Denny, director of Greenscapes, Karen Jenkins, director of the Savannah Tree Foundation, as well as herself, and Philip Perrone, who vigorously chaired the group, making sure every I was dotted and T was crossed. Our mission was to put into legal form the protection of our very visually distinctive linear parks that soften and surround the blocks of our landmark historic district with trees and natural elements of landscaping. Too many hardscape intrusions have been introduced over the years, and now it was time to turn the tide. Indeed, there would be some grandfathered elements, but change of usage would eventually eliminate them. Thus, to add such things as statuary, benches, or signs is defined in the ordinance as an encroachment and should be denied. That very word tells us all we need to know. It is defined as an intrusion of something that does not belong. To approve this request would not only devalue the tree lawn in front of the Low House, but also serve as a precedent for other encroachments in the future. As the expression goes, if you pluck a chicken one feather at a time, no one notices. I urge you to require compliance with the Savannah Tree Lawn Ordinance and reject the request to erect a sign in the tree lawn at 10 East Oglethorpe. She then says, thank you, and that is Artis Wood again. So staff's recommendation, and I'm just gonna scroll down to the bottom here, is for approval for a sign package for the Juliet Gordon Lowe Birthplace property located at 10 East Oglethorpe Avenue with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for final review and approval, because otherwise the work is visually compatible and meets standards. And the first condition being to ensure that all appropriate approvals are received by the City of Savannah for placing the ground sign within the grass plat between the curb and sidewalk. And the second condition being to ensure all sign mounting upon a historic facade is undertaken within the mortar joints between the brick. And I do open for questions from the board.
Thank you, Mr. Jarls. Are there any questions for staff? Okay. If there are none, we will now hear from the petitioner. Thank you, Ryan.
The petitioner is Doug Bean. He seems to be muted.
Is he self-muted? There he is.
Now, Mr. Chairman, my apologies.
No worries. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to very quickly, I guess, wax nostalgic. I've had a lot of petitions before the previous historic district boards of review, and have been caught between clients and the board on a few occasions. Sometimes they get a bit contentious, but I'd just like to opine that in my very humble opinion, I think this client has done exactly what the board asked him to do a month ago, and completely redesigned their design for the tree lawn. And of course, I know the board is quite aware that the tree lawn signs are indeed allowed by ordinance. So I obviously support the staff's recommendation, and I hope you will. I hope you will as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bean. Are there any questions for the petitioner? All right. If there are none, we will now entertain public comment. And again, we ask that you use the raise your hand feature on the right hand side of your screen. You will be called upon, and once you're called upon, we ask that you limit your comments, questions, and all other concerns to 3 minutes. Okay. Is Ms. Wood, I see your name's on here. Is your are you able to speak?
I believe that she stated that she is unable to speak but is listening.
Right. I just wanted to confirm because I do see her name, and I wasn't sure if she had worked out a way of being able to speak or not. If she has, then we'll hear from her momentarily. Well, we'll come back around to her just and confirm, or if somebody can confirm that she is not speaking, I would like to do that, so I don't want to dismiss her presence. But we'll move on to Mr. Rosenwald.
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Good. I'm Bob Rosenwald, Downtown Neighborhood Association. Thanks for the opportunity to speak, and I appreciate Ryan bringing the DNA letter to your attention. I'll try to be as brief as I can without repeating what was in there, but some things have changed since we wrote that letter. And last month, as staff has already pointed out, this matter was continued to allow for the petitioner to revise the tree lawn sign, and that's, of course, been done. However, we believe the entire matter of whether any type of sign should be approved for the tree lawn ought to be revisited by the board because of the additional information, particularly regarding the historic plaque that's in the tree lawn, bare feet away from where the proposed sign is going to be. So we submit that the proposed tree lawn sign is really inappropriate and unnecessary. It's going to be located near an existing Juliet Gordon Lowe historical marker, and regardless of how that sign is categorized, the fact of the matter is it's big, it's there, and it does exactly what is needed, which is I got an arrow pointing to the historic home. We don't think the proposed sign, even redesigned, is compatible with that historical marker to which it will be near, nor with the subdued hues of the home to which it's associated. I'm not going to quibble with the decision rendered by the city yesterday on Nuzo and the tree lawn signage, other than to note that all the extra approvals required and the whereases certainly suggest to me, at least, that such signage is not encouraged in the landmark district. And please, don't be unduly impressed by the raft of tree lawn signs photos included in your packet. As noted, only two of them are in Oglethorpe, and I have to wonder how many of the rest went through any approval process. Regardless, I know of no tree lawn signage requests in the landmark district since the almost 7 years I've lived here until this one. And regardless, we think it's safe to say that none were installed since NUZO was ratified last year. A document that is mentioned addresses tree lawn signs in considerable detail, and it's certainly convoluted. The bottom line for us, we believe the commercialization of public spaces, which includes tree lawns, with private signage should be discouraged. Once again, not to beat the historical marker to death, but it already exists in the narrow tree lawn just a few feet away from where the proposed tree lawn sign location is going to be. At last month's hearing, when you made your determination, no mention was made by staff or the petitioner about the fact of that historical marker being there. So if you hadn't been past there, you wouldn't even know it. So now today there are photos and whatnot in there, although I note that the petitioner's artist rendition doesn't show it at all. Anyway, the public information sign essentially performs the services seemingly desired by the petitioner to point where the house is. In our view, the erection of a private, brightly colored corporate-type sign will interfere with, overwhelm, and detract from the significance and primacy of what we consider a tasteful, understated historical marker. We know of no other stately home open to the public in the historic district that uses tree lawn signs to promote itself or to provide directional information, and it would be a shame to break that long-standing tradition with this proposed sign. To us, additional tree lawn signage is actually unnecessary overkill and only contribute to clutter on this narrow tree lawn. So there is an alternative I wish I might offer, which you may wish to consider. As you can see, as Randy has mentioned, as part of this petition, there is a proposed directional sign attached to the house on the west end at Broughton Street facing Bull, at Broughton Street face at Bull, rather, pointing to the ticket window. We don't favor a whole bunch of signs on landmark structures, but if this building sign is thought by petitioner to be insufficient directional information, perhaps another sign attached to the east end of the home, virtually adjacent to the ticket entry gate, would fill the bill in lieu of the proposed tree lawn sign. The bottom line for DNA, the proposed tree lawn sign is incompatible, redundant, not in keeping with the intent of NUZO, and would be precedent setting in our view as an inappropriate use of the public space. Now, in closing, what I'm about to say in no way lessens our total opposition to the proposed tree lawn sign, but if you are still not convinced that a tree lawn sign is not appropriate and you ultimately conclude that NUZO indeed allows such signage in tree lawns and would be a worthwhile and visually compatible addition to the location, we reluctantly agree with the staff that a pole sign would be the least offensive configuration. But let me say that we believe that the bright Girl Scout green and white colors on the proposed pole sign should be much more subdued than that put forward, to not take pride of place over the important neutral tone historical marker and the home to which it relates. This is a big deal. We hope the weight of what we provided in the letter and what I said today helps convince you to deny the petition to place any sort of sign in the tree lawn. Thanks very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Rosenwald. We will now hear from the next member of the public, and that is showing to be Mr. Ryan Arvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, board members. I'll be brief in my comments. But before I say anything, Ryan, would you please confirm for me and anyone else listening who's confused as to the exact location of the proposed tree lawn sign?
I can. Let me go to the layout here.
Hold on. Thank you. I don't know how I missed that picture.
But let me go to the full set for you.
Okay.
You can see this red dot. Mm-hmm.
And the proposed sign's relation to the existing state marker, is it also in that?
The marker is closer to the front door of the building. In this region.
There, okay. So it will go down at the far, near the far end of the property there. Okay. Thank you for that clarification, first of all. I really have two distinctions to make. if we're talking just in terms of signage, the previous design versus the revised design, if we're just talking about the sign in terms of its aesthetic appearance, HSF and our ARC committee, you obviously feels that this new design is a huge improvement. It's more traditional in its design. And so I think it has that going for it. The materiality of the sign, being aluminum, was a concern for us just because it is not very durable. The aluminum tends to fade over time. I think some thought should be given to the durability of the sign. I think cast iron would be much more appropriate for this area, for a building with such prestige, for such a landmark. We think that, you know, if the sign is approved as submitted, that the materials should be revisited. Now, that aside, more to the point of whether a tree lawn sign should be allowed or not, I feel the issue is very muddy. Just from listening to the comments made thus far, I know that we're kind of confused as to, is it allowed or is it not allowed? So I think before HDBR can even make a determination as to whether this particular design is appropriate versus the old design, I think a long discussion has to be had, and maybe even another continuance to truly determine what is allowed there. Now, I know it sounds like a determination was reached by MPC staff as to its appropriateness, but I think that that's still largely in question. And we happen to agree on some of the points made by Mr. Rosenwald and the DNA, that the signage itself is rather redundant. Signage is important. Wayfinding is important. But on a landmark building like this, is this really driving any additional foot traffic to the site than before? And if not, then it's rather superfluous. Likewise, any type of signage on a landmark building such as this should not be taken lightly, and when appropriate, blade signs are always more appropriate, as on the store. The ticket sign for the ticket building itself, don't know that that's the most appropriate treatment for that building. So again, just in summation, we really draw two distinctions here. You know, as a design, it's much improved, though the materials should probably be of higher quality. But then as to its placement in the tree lawn, yes, several images have been provided. There is a precedent for it in the landmark district. We cannot dispute the existence of tree lawn signs. But as to their history and how they were approved, if they were approved at all, whether they were grandfathered in, I think that distinction needs to be first before we can say whether or not this is appropriate. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Arvey.
Mr. Chairman, do you mind if I clarify something for Ryan Arvey?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. So as I stated before, in section 9.9.17, it states that in lieu of a ground projecting or wall sign permitted above, a non-illuminated decorative pole sign not exceeding 10 square feet in size may be installed in the grass plat between the curb line and sidewalk area, if such site and design are jointly approved by, and then names the various locations. And so this is the item that we asked for the zoning administrator to clarify for us, if it does in fact allow for signage in the tree lawn. And that is when we received the statement that this in fact does prevail over all other of the ordinances, since this is a special sign district. So that in fact would state that we are allowed to have a sign within the tree lawn if it meets these requirements.
I appreciate that, Ryan, for pointing that out. And the fact that it trumps what Ms. Woods was referring to in her letter, the ordinance that she had participated in helping to draft, I guess what you're saying is that this takes precedence over that.
This does take precedence, yes.
Okay. So, if that being the case, and the discussion that will be had is strictly over design merit, then I would still reiterate our comments as to the overall design. It's an especially tall sign. I don't know if there's any way to possibly shorten it, even if it's within the standard. It's exceptionally large, and we do think that the material should be of a higher quality than aluminum. Thank you again. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Arvey, again. And Mr. Jarls, I appreciate that clarification because I was thinking of the same thing. So I appreciate that clarification. And I'm sure that is beneficial to everyone else that's listening as well. It appears we have no more public comment. And if that is indeed the case, we will now allow for the petitioner to respond to public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope you can hear me still.
We can.
Okay. Very quickly, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but the sign is allowed. My client and me as petitioner, I think we've done exactly as we were asked. As for the quality, value, durability of the material, I don't know that the cast iron with care as an aluminum sign would last any longer than an aluminum sign. But I will assure anybody concerned that sign will be finished to appear to be something other than aluminum. It will look like an iron sign for all intents and purposes. The finish and the texture and that sort of thing won't be what you'd ordinarily think of when you think of a smooth, a perfectly symmetrical aluminum item. Although I don't build crooked signs, so they're anyway would be symmetry. But again, some pains will be taken to make sure that the look, the appearance of the is softened, if you will. And then there was one other comment by a gentleman from the public who mentioned that additional signage wasn't necessary, that he didn't think it would do anything to draw more attention or a crowd. I think that my client would want me to say in that regard that this sign is not its purpose is not primarily advertising. It's not trying to bring additional traffic. I think it's more trying to manage the traffic that we, sweet little girls in Girl Scout uniforms all around the front of the place when times are normal, and it's simply trying to direct them to the right place. Hence its position more toward the gate and the courtyard fence and that sort of thing. So just wanted to make that comment very quickly. I hope the board will agree with me and the client, and we can get this approved. Thanks everyone very much.
All right. Thanks again, Mr. Bean. Okay. At this time, we're going to enter into board discussion. No further comment will be accepted unless it is specifically requested and granted by the chairman. So we'll start with the board comment, and we'll start with you, Ms. Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a lot of comments. I don't feel qualified to make a judgment regarding whether or not this is allowed in the sign ordinance. It appears to be. I feel like it's out of the board's purview to make that distinction. However, if we are approving or commenting on this particular design for its visual compatibility, I would agree with Mr. Arvey that the sign is very tall and would be more visually compatible if it were shortened to be more human scale. That's all I have.
Thank you. Mr. Bodick?
I don't have any comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Altshuler.
I think one thing that might be helpful in reducing the size of the sign, which I think most of us agree is a little large and a little high, is reducing the amount of graphic on the sign. One can say tickets much more quickly than Juliet Gordon Low birthplace tickets. It's clear what this place is. And it's got the Girl Scouts on the top of it as well. So I think if we reduce the nature of the type, we could also reduce the size of the sign. As far as I'm dismayed by the number of tree lawn signs that have proliferated over time and also are being grandfathered at this point. And I'm very reluctant to have any sign at all, as other speakers have discussed. But I think that's the ordinance, and that's what we have to live with. So the best we can do is reduce the intrusion of the sign itself.
Thank you, Mr. Altshuler. Ms. Isaacs?
I agree that I feel like that I agree that the scale of the sign is too large. I definitely feel like the design of this is more visually compatible with the other signs that are on Oglethorpe. But again, it's kind of the question of, is the sign even really needed because the plaque is there? And I think that, you know, obviously the entrance into the garden is going to be open. So again, I don't know if it's really needed. That's all I have right now.
All right, thank you. Mr. Dodge.
I agree with the other board members' comments about the size of the sign. And I wish I had asked Ryan earlier whether any other entities that need to approve this have in fact done so yet, or are we the first to have this brought before us? I'd have that question, and like I say, agree with the previous board members' comments about the excessive size of the sign. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Dodge, just to briefly respond to one of your questions, I think we are often one of the first stops due to the visual compatibility, because I think all other parties typically take a position of if we find it not to be visually compatible, and based off of us having to make our determinations off of the existing ordinance, if we find it visually compatible, then they won't support it in some cases. So I think we are often the first step, so we don't get the opportunity to lean on other people's positions and other entities' positions. I just wanted to throw that out there before we go forward.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for that clarification.
No problem. Ms. Memory?
I share a lot of the concerns that have already been expressed. I'm just trying to imagine one of these signs in front of every building in the so-called special sign district, and just am trying to imagine how that is visually compatible. That's where I am right now.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor.
I think just from an aesthetic perspective that the sign is probably too large, and I also think that the colors are pretty bold, so I would like to see something that is a little bit more subdued and smaller. I think it'd be more appropriate. I also am trying to discern the difference between this sign and some of the other signs that they are showing as examples. This seems to be more of a wayfaring sign just because of the tickets and the arrow versus some of the other ones that are more basically a sign that's just stating this is the location type of a sign, like the Ballastone Inn, for example. So I just don't know if we're getting into a new area here, starting to allow more wayfaring, and I am concerned about precedents setting down the road with all kinds of signs going in the tree line that are going to have arrows going every which way to all kinds of buildings. So I do have some concerns about that as well, though I do agree with Ms. Lynch that we have to be careful about it being out of our purview to determine whether or not zoning allows for it to be there or not. I think we can only really speak to the aesthetic of it. So my previous comments are all I have to say about that.
All right, thank you. Mr. Hull?
I guess I will join in the chorus. Certainly the new proposal is much better than the previous one, but we have to realize, looking at the sign, this is not advertising the birthplace. This is simply a sign to say where you can get tickets. It's way too big to advertise where you can get tickets. It's way too tall to advertise, and it's just not visually compatible with the area. I would hope that that they could come back with something that is much different in terms of where it's located. Most signs that I see saying where you get your tickets are on the wall of the building, not out in the middle of the treescape. So I'm very concerned about it. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hull. Before we go back around, I want to raise a couple of points. It seems as if it's a general consensus from the board that there are some serious concerns about the type of sign, with it being, by me, when I say type of sign, I'm speaking specifically to it being a wayfinding sign versus a destination sign. So there's some concerns there. And then in addition, you got some color and issues and such. The examples that you see are relatively muted colors from the examples. In addition to that, with it, if it were to be approved, with it being a directional sign, I think there is definitely opportunity for it to be at the very least lower. And there is some concern, obviously there's some concerns about there being some redundancy as to what is being conveyed through the signage. In addition to that, you know, there is obviously some concern about setting some bad precedent, and there, like Mr. Arvey and a couple of the members of the board have even mentioned, there is definitely a need to potentially for this body to go back and have a conversation about the ordinance and see if the ordinance is actually something, if we're setting a bad precedent and going to set ourselves up for some major concerns in a sense of, I guess, somewhat of a littering of the tree lawns, based off of what some of the public comment that seemed to be their position. But I just want to put those things out there and see, you know, just kind of summarize the first round of comment and see if, and then we can go and see if anybody has any additional comment based off of what I just said, or if you had anything else outside of what we've already discussed.
Mr. Chairman, this is Leah. Do you mind if I clear up a couple of things here?
No problem.
So the tree lawn signs have been allowed since the special sign districts ordinances were created in the 80s. This is not a new thing. And the majority of the ones that exist were, properly executed. The city does not, trust me, the city does not take lightly allowing lawn signs. Excuse me, there have been two, so the 8.5 years I've been here, there have been two approved by the HGBR. And that's one at the acupuncture place on Houston Street, and then the Soho one. So even though they've been allowed basically since about the time I'm born, there has not been a proliferation or a mass amount of illegal tree lawns signs installed in you know, based on my knowledge. I do also want to say the zoning administrator makes the final decision on whether something is permitted by the ordinance or not. And the zoning administrator has made an official determination that tree lawn signs are permitted in section 9.9.17, what covers this portion of the historic district. I'm not, this doesn't mean you all can't say it's not visually compatible or anything like that, but as the legalities go, or the, you know, precedent setting of other signs or those types of things, I wanted to give you a little bit of a background on all of that.
Thank you for that clarification, Leah. And to that point, that the board, just keep in mind that, it, you know, yes, the zoning administrator has made their determination, but in the event, again, that you guys feel that this is setting a bad precedent or what have you, there are other channels in which that can be addressed in spite of the zoning administrator's determination. Just wanted to also get that recorded for the record and make the board knowledgeable of such. Okay, we'll try to go to the second round. Ms. Lynch, did you have anything additional?
I don't have any further comments.
Thank you. Mr. Bodick?
My only comment is that I feel like we're I'm not supposed to use that word. We are being asked to consider an issue, and we're discussing an issue that unfortunately seems pretty cut and dried and is probably something that needs to be taken up in a different form.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Altshuler.
To reiterate a point I made earlier, the assumption is, as you look at this sign, that there are no other signs on the property or anywhere near it, and that this sign is the complete information that one needs. And the fact is, there are other signs in and around the property that say Juliet Gordon Lowe birthplace. And therefore, what I'm suggesting is that's a redundancy. And if we just made it a ticket and an arrow, and even Girl Scouts perhaps, the sign could be substantially smaller.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is it doesn't need to deliver all the information that it's delivering because there are other signs all over the place.
Gotcha. Anything further?
Nope.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Isaacs?
My only additional comment would be just, again, I don't know. I don't feel that the sign is visually compatible as a whole, considering its height, scale, et cetera. And again, just the redundancy of if it's really needed or not. So that's my stance, I guess. I don't have anything else.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Dodge.
I would just reiterate the visual compatibility issue that others have brought up. Other than that, I have no additional comment. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Memory?
I would, reiterate others that smaller would probably be more visually compatible.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor?
I have nothing else to add.
Thank you. And Mr. Hu?
Nothing else.
Okay. And just adding on.
Can I make one more comment?
That's Ms. Isaacs?
Sorry. Yes, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
One of the things that I just noticed is that, like it was mentioned before, no other historic house has signage directing to it, which I think is an important factor. The two signs that are shown to the right are for businesses, and that's their primary business sign. And the business aspect of this project, the gift shop, does have a sign on its own. So I think that's something else to consider as well.
Okay.
Who missed it?
Thank you. All right, and just a reminder, our charge is indeed we hear visual compatibility come up and all of the several of the concerns based in the board discussion. So that is our primary charge as this body. So I would just recommend that you make a motion and vote accordingly. All right.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is Leah. One more thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Just remember you have other signs in this package that need to be voted on as well. You can split that apart if you choose to. And secondly, if there seems to be if there's a consensus with the HGBR board members that the zoning administrator's determination, it can be appealed to the Zoning Board of Appeals, just
correct.
If there is some concern, the chairman initiates that appeal.
Thank you. And I appreciate you specifying. I did raise that point. However, I did not specify the channels in which we could this body could proceed to address concerns with the zoning administrator's decision. And that is the appropriate channel is the Zoning Board of Appeals, as Leah stated. And thank you also for that clarification that this is the complete package. So in the event that the position is to take exception to the tree lawn sign or any other sign the herein, please specify that in your motion.
This is David Altshuler. Can we review all of the signs just quickly so we know what we're dealing with as a package?
We can do one more quick run, but let's try to get this one done.
This is a series of the window signage that was proposed. This is the primary signage for the store, which is located on Bull Street. This is the signage located on the front of the building, which is the wall sign. More window signage, which again is vinyl cut letters. This is the signage located on the ticket building, which is also a wall sign. And then more of the window signage.
Okay. Thank you, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go ahead and get into a vote. So into a motion, I should say. So board members, if you would like to make a motion, it is now the opportunity to do such.
I have a question regarding the motion. Can we make an approval with conditions, and then one of those conditions is omitting a sign?
Absolutely. It is to our discretion how we want to make the motions. Again, these are just staff recommendations. We don't have, as you know, we don't have to follow that. It's on the board. So if that is what you'd like to do, feel free.
Okay. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic District Board of Review approve with conditions the sign package for Juliet Gordon Lowe Birthplace, property located at 10 East Oglethorpe Avenue, with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for final review and approval, because otherwise the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Number one, ensure that all appropriate approvals are received by the City of Savannah for placing the ground sign within the grass plat between the curb and the sidewalk. Just kidding. Is that the one that's the sign that's in the tree lawn? Sorry.
Yes, it is.
It is? Okay. Let me repeat. I'm sorry. Approval, because otherwise the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. I'd like to omit recommendation one. And keep recommendation two, and then include the condition that the tree lawn sign is omitted from the package and denied.
Okay, let me make sure I got you right. No problem.
It was the ground sign and the tree lawn sign, like the wording was messing me up.
You need to be very clear about your denial based on what?
based on visual compatibility standards.
Thank you.
Thank you, Leah. Yes, yes. 1 second, let me get this thing recorded. So we have a motion on the floor made by Ms. Isaacs to approve the sign package at the Juliet Gordon Low Birthplace property. But with conditions, and the conditions are as follows: to omit condition number one, and it's just prescribed in the staff recommendation. Condition number two is to ensure all sign mounting upon the historic facade is undertaken within the mortar joints between the brick. And number three would be to omit the tree lawn sign altogether because it is not visually compatible. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any discussion on that motion? Well, excuse me. Let me go. I got to get a second.
Stan, this is Mr. Second. Bodek. I'd like to second that.
That's Mr. Bodek. Gotcha. All right. So
that's correct.
Sir, we have a motion on the floor, like I said, made by Ms. Isaacs and seconded by Mr. Bodek. And again, that motion is to approve the sign package of Juliet Gordon Low Birthplace property with the following conditions. That is the omission of, the deletion of the staff recommendation condition number one, then include staff recommendation number two to ensure all mounting, sign mounting upon the historic facade is undertaken within the mortar joints between the brick. And then condition number three would be to omit the tree lawn sign in its entirety because it is not visually compatible. Any discussion on the motion? Okay. If there's no discussion, we will now entertain a vote. Ms. Lynch, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Bodek.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Altshuler.
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Isaacs.
Aye.
Thanks. Mr. Dodge. Mr. Dodge, you there? Check your microphone. Mr. Dodge, you're muted. We'll switch it. We'll come right back to you. Let me go ahead and go to Ms. Memory.
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor.
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Hu.
Aye.
Thank you. And Mr. Dodge, are you with us? You're showing self-muted. Just want to clarify, staff. The motion is going to pass with or without Mr. Dodge's vote. Can we just have him as a no vote on this particular one?
Ms. Everett, could you please answer that question?
Can he at least raise his, can he raise his hand?
Panelists don't have the raise your hand feature.
Or put in the chat box that he's voting yes or no.
Mr. Dodge, can you send a chat to me with your vote?
I'm sorry, I had an audio problem for a minute.
There he is.
How do you vote, Mr. Dodge?
Aye.
And then before I record your vote, you are clear on what the motion was, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. Okay, so the ayes have it, and the motion to approve the sign package of the Juliet Gordon Low Birthplace with conditions passes. Okay. Do we need a break, or can we keep? Can we keep going? We got one petition, one more petition. All right. If I didn't hearing no concerns, I'm
okay, gonna keep going.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. I'm gonna keep rolling. So we'll now hear the petition of. Let me get to my right page. LS3P Associates Architects 20-003852-COA at 110 Ann Street, amendments to new construction.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Leah. Is everyone hearing me and seeing my screen with the renderings on it?
Yes.
All right, terrific.
Yes, ma'am.
The applicant is requesting approval for amendments to the previously approved new construction for the property located at 110 Ann Street. So this is the previously approved ground floor plan. This is the proposed ground floor plan. So the first major item that is changing is the building use. Although you don't have purview over use, this affects many things on the building, and that'll help you understand why they're proposing these changes. So the building will no longer be a hotel. It's going to be a multi-family apartment building. So that is clearly a big change here. So all of this was ground floor active use for the hotel previously, and now see these are all apartments on the ground floor here, and on this side are still a couple of active uses. The building footprint has decreased, so you can see here this whole section is at grade now, where previously there was uses here. So this is at garden now. Our internet is very slow these days, not sure why. The building height, so this is previously approved and this is proposed, is reduced by 5 feet 2 inches. A mezzanine level has been added here, which is basically loft spaces for the ground floor apartments. I'm sorry, I pointed over here, but this is not. It's just in this residential portion here. Mezzanines, when properly used as 1/3 or less of the square footage footprint of space, does not count as a story, and they're meeting that standard. So their mezzanine does not count as an additional story here. And as I mentioned, the building has actually been lowered and not increased in height. The bonus story criteria has changed. They previously had approval of using multiple ground floor active uses and 100% modular masonry with 30% quarried stone. They're now using the LEED Gold and 100% modular masonry with quarried stone standard. So no active uses are required at all now on the ground floor. However, they are still keeping some active uses over here, although not required. And this obviously still does qualify as a large scale development project. So they have to meet the large scale development standards still. The bridge and promenade. Oh, I wanted to show you the roof plan here too. So we'll get into it a little bit, but the LEED certification comes much later in the process, even by the per our ordinance, but as sort of a starter to the requirements, they are showing their roof to have a solar array. The bridge and promenade, so again, previously approved, proposed. So the bridge and the promenade, the steel staircases that were here, they were removed because there's no longer active uses on the second floor like there was previously. The second floor has been enclosed where previously it was open, and you can see it here. I'm not sure how much it's not going to make really much of a visual difference, but there's a raised outdoor seating area inside the promenade now to accommodate the grade change. Um, Excuse me. You can see that if my internet will go, here we go. So again, this is the Laurel Street facade. I'm going to show you all four facades, but the Laurel Street facade, the windows in the storefront configuration, you can see have changed everywhere. And this, of course, is mostly due to the change in use. So storefronts aren't necessary now that they are, these are residential units. Window patterns have changed. The rhythm of solid Savoy's has changed, again, because they're units instead of hotel rooms. So this is the Alton Street facade, much less utilitarian than it was previously, because there are so many less active uses. And let's see. All right, so for the, to show you the changes, sort of a three-dimensional component, this is the Ann Street facade, previous, proposed. So these remain commercial uses here. This is a straight-on view of the Ann Street facade, previous, proposed. This is the lobby entrance into the apartment building. This used to be the lobby into the hotel. This used to be the lobby into the music venue over here. I wanted to show you all of the renderings. So this is sort of a close-up detail of the promenade area, previous, current, proposed. So at the top of the building, if you all recall, there was a brick detail. So the detailing is very similar, but before they had a glazed black brick, they've removed the glazed black brick project. So this is what it looks like close up now. This was previously the Alton Street facade, which again used to be utilitarian. We'll talk about the materials a little bit more, but you can see this is the granite has been eliminated from the project and is this limestone instead. And it there's a bit of a different architectural rhythm here. Same Zubly Street. So the rhythm has changed a bit. The storefront is gone, and this is limestone now. So I'll show you the material board because they actually changed to a limestone at the last amendment. So this is the materials from the last amendment in May, but now they have eliminated this granite and this black brick. So this is the, these are the two materials that are on the whole building. This is the, I believe it was called blue black brick and this mortar. And then this is the natural quarried limestone here. All right, so the project was originally reviewed under the pre-NUZO ordinance, the 2019 version. So obviously it continues on under that ordinance. And this, we did review quite a number of standards just because of the amount of changes, but generally most of the standards are met just due to the size of the project. I'm gonna address a few, I'm gonna address just our recommendation, staff's recommendation. And I also want to say that I do want to, note, recent addition to our recommendations that our recommendation is subject to change information. And we actually had a phone call, staff had a phone call and a discussion with the petitioner yesterday regarding some of the conditions, and some additional information has been provided that I'm going to show you. So we're actually going to be verbally eliminating some of these conditions as I go through the standard. So we do feel that Everything is visually compatible. All the changes are compatible. With regard to the design standards, there is a standard that says to subdivide the facade into base, middle, and top. And we don't feel that standard is met, as this, the base, the string horse, the banding for the base does not continue across the center bays. They did provide a revised proposal that indicates the banding continue. So we feel we're not going to make that a recommendation any longer. No details regarding the fabric awnings provided. So you can see that they changed. They've pretty much eliminated all of these, but no details for these fabric awnings were provided. So we're asking for the details, and they actually provided that detail there, and all of the awning standards are actually met. So we were going to remove that recommendation as well. And then with regard to the bonus story, I wanted to discuss the LEED Gold standard with you all, just so you're familiar with what they're changing to. So that is referred to as, I'll go to the staff recommendation so you can actually see the standard. So the standard is called the sustainability and materials criteria to achieve a bonus story. So you're required to achieve LEED Gold certification on the building, completion of certification requirements, and confirmation from the awarding agency shall be required before a certificate of occupancy is issued. The applicant indicates in the submittal packet that substantial completion of LEED Gold will be provided to the MPC staff prior to applying for the certificate of occupancy. And showed on that roof plan, part of this criterion includes their solar PV array on the roof. So there's a part B to that criterion requirement, and that is that exterior building walls shall incorporate 100% modular masonry and 30% quarried stone, right here, natural quarried stone on all street fronting facades. And they are meeting, these are the percentages on each of those facades. And that is indicated by the white color on each of the facades. Here. Okay. So with regard to entrances, a minimum of one primary entrance is required to be provided for every 60 feet of street frontage. So on the sorry, it's locked up again. On this portion of the building on the Laurel Street facade, due to the length of it, they're actually required to have three. They have two here. The petitioner did not yet address that one. There's apparently a grade issue that they needed more. I believe the petitioner is going to address that in their presentation. So we are recommending that they meet that standard and add the third entrance. As I mentioned, they've reduced the quantity of materials that they're using, the different types, to just this brick and just and have eliminated the other materials. Initially, I was recommending they provide a sample of the limestone and the associated mortar, forgetting that they had actually already changed to limestone in the last amendment. So obviously I'm eliminating that recommendation because here's the limestone right here. And for all large scale development, a sample panel is required. So with regard to, we're recommending approval with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for final review and approval because the proposed amendments are otherwise visually compatible and meet the standards. So we're eliminating number one because they've provided the information for that. We're eliminating two because they provided that. Tame 3, if during construction, roof equipment is visible from the public right-of-way to provide screening, chances are behind the parapet wall and due to the height of the building, it won't be visible. But as of now, they're not showing screening around it. So we want to ensure that's covered. So we are retaining this recommendation, entrance on the Laurel Street facade, and provide a sample panel per the sample panel policy. So three, four, and six. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Leah. So just as a point of clarification, we still remain with conditions number three, number four, and number six, correct?
Yes.
All right, thank you. So any questions for staff?
This is Stan Barula. I had one. Leah, have we ever had a situation where a certificate of occupancy was not issued because there were problems with the LEED certification?
This is a brand new criterion and has never been used.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
and I apologize, I forgot to show the public comments. Artist Wood sent in this public comment recommending that tree lawns be required for this project. However, as you're all aware, that is the tree lawn ordinance, and you actually don't have purview over that. But my understanding is that the tree lawn ordinance requires tree lawns for all new handle at the permitting level. But this is the adjacent existing parking garage to this site. That she shared to accentuate her concern. And that right here is where this new building will be. This little building's gone. And I apologize, I wanted to show her public comment. But Mr. Houle, the LEED standard is brand new, but in the previous iterations of the ordinance, they were required to have a green roof per the ordinance, again administered by the city, and we did that on probably two projects. I believe the green roof standard was used, and in both cases they were granted their certificate for their green roof by the city's department for the green roof ordinance, and they have maintained that requirement for the green roof as well. The background on that is I don't know if the public, but it was to strengthen that criterion to go beyond a green roof and require the whole building to be, quote, green. But in the past, with the previous ordinances, we have not had an issue with this standard. I hope that helps.
Thank you.
I have a question too. Okay. So you said this is a large scale development, but since it's an apartment and not a hotel, they don't have to have activated ground uses. Did I hear that right?
Right. So the only time anybody's ever required to have activated ground floor uses is if they are choosing that for their bonus story. And they are no longer choosing that story.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions for staff? Okay. If there are none, we'll go ahead and hear from the petitioner. Thanks, Leah.
Thank you.
We ask that you state your name for the record.
I believe it's going to be Cook.
What's that?
I believe it's going to be Scott Cook.
Okay.
Hey, everyone. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry, I was muted by the organizer. Hi, everyone. I'm Scott Cook with Ulster EP, representing Flank. I just want to thank Leah and the MPC staff for this really thorough review and explanation. I know it's kind of a lot to absorb of everything that we're proposing to change. But specifically, just wanted to to make sure everybody understood like what the outstanding recommendations from staff are. The only two that we're aware of that are outstanding being recommended by the staff is the sample panel and the roof screening. If it's visible from the public right away, of course, we'll do that. And the primary entrance on Laurel Street. And that one I'd like to explain just a little bit on. That was just a miscalculation on our side in terms of how the facade was being measured to understand how many entrances we need. We find no issue in complying with the ordinance there. We just didn't address it in this short period of time from when we got the staff report, just because, as Leah kind of explained, there's quite a bit of a grade change along Laurel Street. And so when we add the entrance, we just need to be cognizant of where that works out from a civil grading standpoint. So instead of us proposing a door location quickly, we'd like to work through it. And hopefully that'll be acceptable at a staff level to locate the required entrance that we need. But besides that, instead of just kind of reiterating everything Leah presented, I'd like to leave the rest of my time to answer any questions that y'all have.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Before I get the board asked a question, I want to clarify one thing. So in bringing the information back to staff, I'm going to assume, and I'll ask that you to confirm, that whatever door system that it would be comparable to all of the other entrances that are there, correct?
Absolutely. It'd be the same material and make as the other entrances that are, say, along Ann Street. It's just more about the location of it in terms of grade. So, yes, it'd be the same exact material. All of our ground floor storefronts and windows are actually going to be aluminum clad wood assembly. So it's gives it a little bit more of a residential scale. So the doors will actually be aluminum, but set within that assembly.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, board members, any questions for the petitioner? None? That's surprising. There's a lot of information to absorb. All right. Sounds like we're good to go, Mr. Cook. We'll talk to you again after the public comment.
Okay.
All right. At this time, we will now hear public comment. Please raise your hand. Use the raise your hand feature and wait till you're called upon. I wanted to reiterate that Ms. Artis Wood submitted a statement that would be captured within the public comment section, and that statement was there was a need to add a tree lawn, which again is not in this board's purview, but we did want to at least allow for her information to be captured for the record. All right, so now we have Mr. Arvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. Ryan Arvey, Historic Savannah Foundation. Our architectural review committee really went back and forth on this one, trying to decide whether or not we would speak as to this project. Ultimately, we decided to put a few things on the public record. And though we understand that some of this is not fall under HDBR purview, we did want to go on record as stating that we feel visually, we believe visually that the building in its previous incarnation was a more successful design than the revised, mostly because of the commercial use on the first floor. Now we understand the change in usage no longer requires that commercial use, and these are now going to be largely residential units, and we understand that. We did want to go on record as saying, though, that we feel it's a missed opportunity to not activate the street. We know that there are some commercial uses in that one corner, and we commend that. But we really feel that the project would have been much more successful in activating that street, especially as it relates not just to the street itself, but the adjacent neighborhood. And, I think that there are some procedural issues here that trouble us as far as a project gaining approval because it's presented as one thing and a particular usage and a particular owner. And then when that changes, having the approval now go back through review as an amendment to a project that has changed so much, it troubles us. I don't know that much can be done here in this particular setting, but we did want to just go on record as saying that, you know, we did prefer the previous project's design and materials and its way it related to the street and the neighborhoods. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Arve. Any further comment from the public? Okay, appears we have no other hands. Therefore, we will allow for the petitioner to respond to public comment.
Thanks. I'd like to respond first to the written public comment from Artist Wood. Obviously, tree plantings are not under the purview of this board, and we absolutely agree. We'd love to have more trees. I think the hard part in a lot of areas in the historic district, and particularly our site, is the amount of utility work that is under our sidewalks. So we're sometimes not able to have tree root balls to extend that far below grade because of utility conflicts, and that is definitely the case on this project, on the parking garage project across the street. Alton Street has a major force main, city force main running through the middle of it, and an easement extends all the way to the south end of our building and all the way to the face of that garage. And so we're unable to provide any plantings below grade in that area. You can actually see on that drawing, there's a dashed line running from Alton Street. That is an existing force main that's running through, and an easement that runs right through our sidewalk on our property. Also, there's going to be underground transformer vaults along Ann Street. Instead of having the transformers above grade, which is pretty detrimental visually, so it's quite a challenge. Just overall, from a development standpoint, and please keep this drawing up to answer the other public comment as well. But we would love to add more trees, and we definitely have been trying to from a site development standpoint. But in terms of adding more, we'd love to, and we were proposing doing above grade planters as much as possible to try to soften up the development, the overall development, including 111 Ann Street and the 113 MLK Market, which is all part of one master development. To address the comment of Mr. Arve in terms of the ground floor active use kind of going away, would like to point to that this is a master overall development with a very activated, actually, market to just across Lowell Street from this 110 project. The intent of providing this kind of promenade in between these uses was to activate it, right? We hope that the outdoor dining and the restaurant really activate within our site, but also hopefully pulling people from the historic district and over to this area. So We still have located some common public areas along the ground floor in hopes of continuing the ground floor active use, even though we're changing our criteria. Thanks. That's all I have to respond to public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. All right. There's no more public comments, so we'll go into board discussion now. At this time, again, there no more testimony or public comment will be received unless requested and granted by the chair. So we'll start with you this time, Mr. Hull.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little bit disturbed Mr. Arve's comments about the loss of identity on the facades. I don't want to insult the architects, but it does appear that it looks like that someone four big boxes and dropped them on the street and then poked holes in them. There doesn't seem to be anything. I understand the trees and that they can't be put there to add some life to the buildings, but there doesn't seem to be any sort of effort to provide any sort of interest to the buildings at all. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hu. Ms. Taylor?
I too can see the concern, but I'm not really sure what can be done because of the change of use. I really don't have any other recommendations for how to enhance the looks of it. I actually prefer the color palette better. I like it better than what was originally proposed. I think they're a little more subtle. I prefer that. But I really don't have anything else to add that could enhance the design. It's, you know, it basically, I can see how they are limited in what they can do on that. And other than that, I agree with staff's remaining three conditions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Ms. Memory.
I guess my concern is, as Mr. Arvey said, the process question. And, you know, just as a, for the record, how much can change or how much change do as a board can we tolerate before it becomes a different project altogether? That's all.
Thank you. Mr. Dodge.
I agree with the remaining staff recommendations and also with the previous board members' comments. But other than that, I have no additional comment.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Ms. Isaacs.
I agree, obviously, with staff's remaining recommendations. The other thing, I guess I'm going to be the outlier in this, is that I missed the black brick. Because I felt like that gave a very, that and then the, it was almost like the double height of the base floor gave a very distinctive base. And this, if you go back, yeah, there, if you look at the, it looks like there's an inset, on those first two floors that has been taken away. And I felt like that was more visually compatible again, because it differentiated the floors. And it gave a very strong base for the building. And I feel like that's gone now. And I wonder if that could be brought back, even though the use has changed. Obviously, I know the windows and the storefront and things can't be changed because of the use. But I wonder if the brick and if the insets could be brought back. And other than that, that's all the comments that I have.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. Mr. Allshiller?
I wish the building had more character. It seems very without any personality at all. And I'm not sure how to deal with it. And we're dealing with big changes here from one sort of edifice to another, one sort of usage to another. We're dealing with juggling with a lot of things at one meeting, and I wish we weren't in this position, but I find it boring.
Thank you, Mr. Altshuler. Okay. Mr. Bodick.
I have no comment.
Thank you, sir. I am Ms. Lynch.
I have no comment.
All right, thank you. Before we go around the second round, I want to submit, you know, I understand, I struggle with this one as well. I understand the need for the change given the current climate with COVID and such directly impacting travel. But I really do struggle. I think it as a hotel really was a much more handsome structure. And in addition, you know, Ms. Isaacs, you aren't necessarily the outlier on this. I do agree that the black brick was a very unique approach, but it worked very well. I think it really did give a good opportunity for a clearly defined base, middle, and top. And we kind of lose that. Well, actually, don't want to say kind of lose that. We lose that significantly in the new design. Again, I understand the change in usage, but and that will give a good segue to that change in usage as Ms. Memory raised. If I may ask of staff, Ms. Everett, if you wouldn't mind, would you please speak to that momentarily? The change, if I mean, how it impacts, or should the board, is this a new petition altogether, or what the situation may be based off of the significance of this change of usage?
Now, the previous, and I didn't see the previous application, but for this one.
Previously, there were very public uses on the ground floor. There were there was a music venue, if I'm not mistaken. There was restaurant. It was a very street activated space, and now mm-hmm. it's primarily more residential in nature.
And the original application was for it to be a hotel, correct?
Correct.
So this would. I'd have to look at the ordinance again as to whether or not this is a major change, but it appears to me that it would be because it's a complete change in use from a hotel to a resident. But I'd have to look at.
But use is not within the HRB's purview.
Purview, correct. It's not. It's right. Just a matter of whether or not it's fitting into the. Yeah, you're right. It's not.
And I guess visually, I mean, it is what it is. I think the only concern from the use standpoint was the amount of, well, they already said they'll address the amount of interests. And I think, and Ms. Memory, you can clarify for me, I think it was primarily speaking to the street activation. Correct, Ms. Memory?
That's correct. And some of the design changes.
That were impacted, well. I mean, as a result of?
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
But all the requested changes fall within the ordinance?
Yes.
Yes, except one. This is Leah. Except one condition that they've agreed to. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Well, then you have to look at it as to whether or not it meets the ordinance, because that's what your purview is.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. Okay. So we'll go back and try to go through the second round and go ahead and get this thing voted on. Mr. Hu, any further comment? Mr. Hu?
I'm sorry, I had to slip away for 2 seconds.
No worries. Any further comment?
None.
All right, thank you. Ms. Taylor?
I have no further comments.
Thank you. Ms. Memory?
No further comments.
Thank you. Mr. Dodge?
Nothing further.
Okay, thanks. Ms. Isaacs?
I also wanted to add that I do appreciate that the architect added in the courtyard and kind of broke up the massing that's along that facade. And when you look at the plans, you can tell that there, you know, are uses on the ground floor over there close to where the back of that marketplace is going to be, which I think will be successful in having at least some public engagement. I still am reiterating my comment about the black brick and the brick design detail that they had previously about incorporating that back in, if that was possible, because I think that would be very successful to bring it back, but especially visually. And give it some more interest, like some other comments that were made. And that's all I got.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Alshiller, anything further?
No, nothing further.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Bodick, anything?
No comment.
Thank you, sir. And Ms. Lynch, anything further?
I actually would like to add a comment. I was just kind of trying to figure out the best way to say it without feeling like I was giving a personal opinion, but I believe that objectively the material change and the material insets at the base, you know, as stated by a few of the other board members, from the previously approved application to now, that I do feel that the building is less visually compatible at this point, and it really speaks to the breakdown of the scale that material change of the base and some of the material insets that were incorporated in the previous design. And I'm sensitive to the fact that use is not in our purview, and therefore you know, the active uses and the number of entrances may be diminished right now, but I do feel that the two-story, these are quite large structures, even though they've been broken down over the block, but I do feel that horizontal delineation is much less successful, much less visually compatible now, making the buildings just that much more massive in scale. And I feel that that's unfortunate. And if there's any way we could incorporate that in a recommendation, I would be in favor of that.
Mr. Stevens, we'll be right back. I'm not sure where he was in the, not sure which board member's turn it was next to speak, but he said he would be right back.
I believe I was the last board member in the discussion line to speak.
I'm back. Sorry about that. I had a brief distraction. I'm back. And we're rolling again. Sorry about that. So Ms. Lynch, you finished up?
Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Okay. If there are no further board discussion, we'll now entertain a motion. And thank you, staff, for showing the recommendations again. And let me just note and remind the board that staff recommendation, the conditions number 1, 2, and 5 have been removed from the conditions, and item number 4 has been agreed upon by the petitioner.
I have a question. Can we ask the petitioner a question?
It's up to you, Mr. Chairman.
Does it affect
the recommendations? Yes.
It's about the recommendations, you said?
It's about a material. If there's a reasoning why they took out the black brick, like is it because of lead or, you know, or if it was just eliminated?
I'll allow. We can go ahead and we got to be brief with it though.
Okay.
Mr. Cook, would you speak question. To that, please?
Yes, I'm here.
Could you repeat the question? Yeah, what's the reasoning for the black brick being eliminated? Was it something to do with the LEED certification, or was it just removed?
It was a design choice that we made. A lot of what we were doing on the ground floor, so over time, we actually at one time had glazed brick spanning across the entire base of most of the building. And then we kind of moved actually in further amendments to actually only locate the glazed brick in like focal areas within recessed bays. But as we developed this design, you know, with the apartment buildings, that the window kind of spacing changed. And when we were applying that secondary material, in some ways to us, it felt only at the recess, it felt a little forced, and we just preferred the kind of solid materiality that we did. And we felt like the base that we were providing that spans all the way across, it's actually, the base of the building is actually two soldier courses with a common bond banding in between it. We really feel like it actually breaks up the base of the building. It is subtle, but we feel like if you look at some of the kind of zoomed in renderings at a larger scale, particularly like the one that's kind of a view of the promenade, if you kind of scroll down, we feel like it really will actually be, and actually that piece of between the two roll-out coursings actually is recessed a half of an inch. And there's going to be a shadow line that's also going to be there. We feel like it still does break the building up into base, middle, top. Sometimes renderings don't really show that very well. But I don't know if that answers your question, but you know, having an opportunity to put the glazed brick somewhere, we felt, and this configuration of how we had to kind of break the massing up felt a little forced, and we just preferred to not use the glazed brick, to answer your question.
Okay.
All square, Ms. Isaacs.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Cook. Okay, now we're going to go back and we'll stay the course of with a motion and a vote. Anyone?
I'll make a motion. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic District Board of Review approve with conditions the amendments to the previously approved new construction for the property located at 110 Ann Street. Let me rescind my motion. I need to rethink on how I want to say that.
Okay.
That's why I haven't said anything yet, because I was trying to think of how to word it.
No worries. Anyone else want to make a motion?
All right, this is Stephen Bodek. I will make a motion to approve staff's recommendations for the amendments to the previously approved new construction for the property located at 110 Ann Street. The following conditions to be submitted to staff for final review and approval, because proposed amendments are otherwise visually compatible. And I believe we're talking 3, 4, and 6. If during construction, roof equipment is visible from the public row, provide screening, add a third primary entrance on the Laurel Street facade, and provide a sample panel for the sample panel policy.
Okay. And just for a point of clarification, are you amenable, as the petitioner requested, are you amenable to the third primary entrance provided on Laurel Street be reviewed at staff level?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Okay, so right now we have a petition on the floor, a motion on the floor made by Mr. Bodek to approve with conditions, and that would be, those conditions would be item number 3, 4, and 6 outlined in the staff recommendations, and those conditions are as follows. If during construction roof equipment is visible from the public right of way, provide screening. Item number 4, add a third primary entrance on the Laurel Street facade that will be reviewed by on the staff level. And then number 6, provide a sample panel per the sample panel policy. Is that right, Mr. Bodick? I'm going to assume the silence is an agreement, and then we'll entertain a second.
Kevin Dodge,
second.
Mr. Dodge?
I have a
second.
1 second, Ms. Isaacs. All right, so we had a motion on the floor made by Mr. Bodick and seconded by Mr. Dodge, and that, again, that is to approve with conditions number 3, 4, and 6 as outlined in the staff review, and with the modification of item number 4 to be reviewed at the staff level. Any discussion on the motion? Your turn, Ms. Isaacs.
Make an amendment to the motion. Yeah. I'd like to make an amendment to include another condition that they, sorry, I'm just still trying to figure out how to word it, that a restudy of the base two floors with additional brick detailing be incorporated for staff review. In order to be more visually compatible as the design was previously.
So your amendment is
And that would include the use of the black brick.
Okay, so your amendment
is what I'm saying making sense?
I'm gonna try to restate it and see if I captured what you're saying, and if I'm missing anything, we can try to iron through it.
Okay.
But my understanding of your amendment is to restudy the base of the building with additional brick detail, not limited to the inclusion.
Not limited to the base.
Not limited to the base?
Not limited to the base, no. Because I feel like that the brick detailing before throughout the entire building was more, the entire building side was more visually compatible with the addition of the black brick. So that's what I want them to restudy, if that makes sense.
So you want
re-including some of those elements.
Your amendment is to restudy the brick detailing at the base as well as the other forms of the other facades to become more visually compatible?
Yes, as previously submitted.
That's more consistent with the previous submission, okay. So I'm gonna try to restate it again. The amendment is to-
I know, I'm sorry.
No worries, restudy the brick detailing at both the base as well as the rest of the structure to be more in keeping with the previous submission, correct?
Yes, and then somewhere in there we need to include the use of the black brick.
Okay. Black glazed brick. To also include the black brick.
Yeah.
So let's see, one more time. Restudy the brick detailing at the base as well as throughout the remainder of the facades to be in more keeping with the previous submission, also incorporating the black brick to be more visually compatible. Is that what that
yeah,
sound
that
like?
That sounds close enough. Yes.
Okay. All right. Is anybody willing to second the amendment?
Stan Hool, I'll second.
Mr. Hool. All right. So let me try to summarize this whole thing. So right now we have a motion on the floor, well, an amendment on the floor, and the amendment states let me back up. There's a motion on the floor to approve with the conditions item number 3, 4, and 6 as outlined in the staff review, and item number 4 is to have that item brought back to be reviewed at the staff level. In addition, an amendment is made and is on the floor to restudy the brick detailing at the base as well as on the other facades to be more consistent with the previous submission, as well as incorporating the black brick to make the structure, the design more visually compatible. So those are the, those are the five conditions in the event, the four conditions in the event that this amendment is accepted. Okay, so let's vote on the amendment. Is everybody, is there any discussion on the amendment? Okay, if there is no discussion on the amendment, let's vote on the amendment. Ms. Lynch, how do you vote on the amendment?
Aye.
Aye, okay. Mr. Bodick? Mr. Bodick, you there?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
You want me to repeat the amendment?
Are you asking if I'm in approval of it?
Yeah, are you voting in favor for the of the amendment, or are you voting against the amendment?
I guess I'm voting in favor for it. Aye.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Mr. Altshuler.
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Isaacs?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Dodge?
Aye.
Ms. Memory?
Aye.
Ms. Taylor?
Aye.
Thank you. And Mr. Hu?
Aye.
Okay. Now we got that part out of the way. Restate the motion, including the amendment, and then we'll go into the vote for the overall motion. So the motion is on the floor, made by Mr. Bodick and seconded by Mr. Dodge, to approve the petition for amendments to a previously approved new construction property located at 110 Ann Street, with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for final review and approval because the proposed amendments are otherwise visually compatible and meet the standards. Those conditions are, as in the staff recommendations, item number 3, if during construction roof equipment is visible from the public right-of-way, provide screening. Okay, item number 4, add a third primary entrance on the Laurel Street facade, which will be reviewed at the staff level. Number 6, provide a sample panel per the sample panel policy. And then we'll call, and then the amendment to these conditions would be to include the condition of restudying the brick detailing at the base and all other facades to be in more keeping with the previously submitted petition, as well as incorporating the black brick to be more visually compatible. Everybody clear on that one? Okay,
yes.
I was gonna take the silence as a yes. And if that is indeed the case, we are now ready to entertain a vote. And Ms. Lynch, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Bodick?
Aye.
Thank you. Mr. Altshuler?
Aye.
Ms. Isaacs?
Aye.
Mr. Dodge?
Aye.
Ms. Memory?
Aye.
Ms. Taylor?
Aye.
And Mr. Hu?
Aye.
Okay. The motion carries, and the petition is approved with conditions. Thank you. Okay, we'll move on to the approved staff reviews. A list of staff reviews have been attached to the agenda. You may review those items at your leisure. Now we go on to work performed without a certificate of appropriateness. There are none listed. We go to the report on deferred items to staff. Attached is a report regarding items deferred to staff, such as conditions stipulated by board decisions and current status reports and ongoing projects. You can review that as your leisure. Then we move on to the notices and proclamations. There are none listed. There is no other business listed. And then we'll move into the adjournment.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Do you mind if I say two things? This is Leah.
Absolutely.
So your print, I don't know if you didn't print out the final agenda, but there is actually a report on work performed without a COA.
Oh.
It just was uploaded right before the final agenda, so you might have missed it.
Okay. My apologies.
That's okay. And then other business, I want to say just one thing is next month, you, Mr. Chairman, will need to nominate a three-person nominating committee, right. And that not for to elect chair and vice chair for 2021. I just wanted you to be aware of that, so you're not surprised when you see it on the agenda next month. So if you want to think about who you want to nominate, so.
Thank you, Leah. Anything else?
No. Thank you for letting me interrupt.
No problem. No, we had to get that done. No problem at all. And thank you for that correction on the works. Perform without a certificate of appropriateness. I thought I printed the most recent version, but apparently not. next regular meeting for the HDBR meeting will be virtual, and that will be held October the 14th, 2020. There are no other concerns. Is there a motion to adjourn?
This is Ellie, also move.
Thank you, Ms. Isaacs. And the meeting is adjourned. You guys have a good day.
Thank you, everyone. See you next month.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.